Alrighty, rocking and rolling. Hour number two of our radio program. That's right. It is a Zach Gelb show, coast to coast on the Infinity Sports Network. The draft is right around the corner. We are slightly 2 weeks away from the NFL draft starting April 24th in Green Bay, Wisconsin will be when the first round does get underway. And I think we know who's going number one, but then the chaos really could start with the second overall pick with the Cleveland Browns being on the clock. Let's try to get some clarity right now. Dane Brugler does a great job covering the NFL draft for The Athletic, and he's kind enough to join us on the Zach Gelb Show. Dane, appreciate the time. How you been?
I'm good. How have you been?
I've been fantastic. So I think it's safe to say that Tennessee's taking Cam Ward with the number one overall pick. Do you feel confident at this rate in saying that?
That's what the tea leaves say, right? I mean, obviously the Titans aren't going to come out and say who they're taking at number one, but judging on the way they've handled this offseason, the way they've built this roster, the way that they've looked at these quarterbacks and canceled some other visits, all signs point to them picking Cam Ward at number one overall. And you can understand why they're coming to that conclusion. When you have a chance to draft a quarterback who you believe could be realistically a top 12 to 14 quarterback in the NFL, he has that type of ability and potential, it'd be hard to pass, especially when you're the Titans. And it's been a while since you have hit on a quarterback. You know, you go back to Marcus Mariota, go back even back to Vince Young. I mean, it's been a while. I mean, I guess you could count the Ryan Tannehill years, but it's been a franchise that has been longing for a long-term answer at that position. And Cam Ward, even with a first-year general manager, second-year head coach, it feels like he is the guy that they're leaning towards. And you understand why, because if he didn't go one, he would go two. The Browns would be more than happy to stick there at number two, take the quarterback. But I don't think that's going to be the case. He will be the number one pick. And it's more of a question, could the Giants come in with a team like that with a late offer? I don't see it. I think the Titans stick and pick. Cam Ward will be in Tennessee.
Why do you think the gap has been so distant between Cam Ward and Shador Sanders, in your opinion?
You know, I can go back to when you project these guys out, do you project Cam Ward as being a top 15 quarterback, a guy that can help you go to the playoffs and compete for the division, things like that? Because that's what you're looking for ultimately. The goal when you need a quarterback is not to find the next Pat Mahomes, because that's just unrealistic.
Yeah.
The goal should be find a top 15 quarterback, someone that can help you get to the playoffs, because if you get in the playoffs, you've got a shot. And so I think teams think of Cam Ward in that way, where that's not necessarily the case with Shador Sanders, who has the talent to start in the league, but is he truly a guy that's going to elevate everybody around you and be someone that's going to drag the team to the playoffs if that's what it takes? He's going to be very dependent on his supporting cast. And, you know, part of that is he doesn't have the top-tier physical traits that ideally you want for the position. His size, the mobility, the arm strength, it's more average than above average. Now, there's a lot of things I like about his profile. He's smart, he's tough, he's accurate, not quite as accurate as 74% completions would suggest. There's a lot of, you know, 28% of his throws or his completions were screens. And so that 74% inflated a little bit, but he's still generally an accurate passer. It's just the way he wants to play. Does he have the physical traits necessary to really make that work at the next level? And that's where the question marks come in. So I think teams believe he can start. They're just not sold that, all right, this is someone that's going to elevate our offense from day one. And that's where the disconnect is. And that's why we might not see Shador go two or three to the Giants, you know, Browns and Giants, two teams that need a quarterback. If that's the case, then where does he fall? Could it be the Saints at number nine? Could it be 20 in the Steelers? So Shador really will be a wild card on draft night.
And I'm not even saying I think Shador is going to be great. I think he could be good, very good in the NFL. But that's been the popular conversation today, Shador falling. And you mentioned the Saints. I've heard others mention the Steelers as well. I even heard others mention, oh, maybe the Browns and the Giants make a pick at 2 and 3 that aren't Shador, and then they come back up to get him. You know, I look at teams like the Browns at 2, the Giants at 3, and then the Raiders at 6. It's like, why not? Like, all three of those teams, there's legitimately a chance that all three are now expected to pass on Shador. It's just crazy to me.
And see, like, I would push back a little bit on the notion that he's falling, just because, like, okay, I've been pretty consistent on my evaluation of Shador since the fall. I've always graded him as a late one, early second round pick. But we knew, because there is such a need for quarterbacks at the top, sometimes those guys get pushed up. Not always, but sometimes. And so when you're doing a mock draft, I think you can understand why a team like the Browns or the Giants would go that direction because, yeah, they need somebody. But it's not necessarily just missing on the quarterback when you're picking at top five. It's also you're passing on a Travis Hunter, an Abdul Carter, and you're passing on one of those guys. So you're potentially missing out, not just on missing a quarterback, but on a true impact player on a roster that really needs those guys. And so, and this is, you know, the Browns have done a lot of work on Jaxson Dart and Tyler Shuck and Jalen Milroe. Same. So the Giants have done as well. And so they're in a really interesting spot, and it's not all set in stone. We could still see a quarterback go two or three, but I think it's more likely we see those teams go in a different direction, and then it becomes, okay, where do these quarterbacks go? And, you know, the over-under on a quarterbacks in the first round is 2.5. I'm going to take the over. I'm going to bet on teams going with finding those quarterbacks, whether it's Jaxson Dart, Tyler Shuck, whoever it may be. I think they're going to see these teams roll the dice, just maybe not in the top five.
So obviously Dart has been talked a lot about. I would not use a first round pick on him. I saw Jalen Milroe mm-hmm. was invited to the draft. Just what's your evaluation, Dane Brugler, on both Jaxson Dart and then also Jalen Milroe?
Yeah, I get the intrigue with Jaxson Dart because I think he's going to get that Bo Nix bump where you see the physical traits, you see the intangibles off the charts, 4-year senior. So he's played a lot of football. The disconnect for me is just that Ole Miss offense. He wasn't asked to do a lot of things that he'll be asked to do in the NFL. So I think physically he has the talent for the next level. Just mentally, can he get to the backside read? Can he do full field progressions on a consistent basis? There were a lot of times where I like his mobility, but it was one read, drop my eyes, and take off. And that's just not going to work at the next level. So there is a projection involved in terms of his mental development. And that's something that I can understand taking a chance on that, but I agree with you. I would love to draft him in the second round, develop him, bring him along at his own pace. But if you're taking him, if the Steelers take him, you know, in 21st overall or whatever, you know, it's just that puts expectations on him. He's going to be expected to see the field pretty quickly. And it becomes, you know, you don't want to rush the quarterback position and that development. So, and Jalen Milroe, you understand the intrigue with him because the athlete is tremendous. The arm strength, check that box. Size, check that box. It's more about, okay, can he develop the feel that's necessary to work within the pocket? Talk to some coaches, they'll tell you that's you can't. It's either you have it or you don't. Other coaches will say, well, you know, we can bring you along and get you better there. So Jalen Milroe to me is the bigger risk, but it's more of a, you know, boom or bust type of pick.
I'll just throw a comparison out here for two quarterbacks. Jalen Milroe reminds me a lot like Anthony Richardson, and just in terms of there's such a high ceiling, but then the floor is so low and there's no middle ground. It's either it's all or nothing for Jalen Milroe. And then, you know, with Shedeur Sanders, people call him brash and arrogant, and I see some of these reports. It kind of reminds me a lot of the way that we talked about Baker Mayfield. And I could see Shedeur having a little bit of a chip on his shoulder and being better than what people think. What do you make of those two comparisons?
Yeah, and I think that the off-the-field stuff with Shedeur is definitely, I mean, every team looks at it a little bit differently. And I certainly understand making that comparison. It's just on the field, you better be able to back it up. And I think that's when you study Shedeur, the Big 12 is not exactly murderer's row when we talk about defenses, but you watch the three best defenses he faced last year. You're looking at Nebraska, Kansas State, BYU. It was tough. And so now part of that, his offensive line was bad. Part of it, no run game. But the quarterback's still making bad decisions and not helping things. And so that I think bringing it back to the field, that's where, you know, you kind of struggle with the evaluation. With Milroe, I think if I understand certainly what you're saying with Anthony Richardson. I think if you like Milroe, your comparison's Jalen Hurts, who was, you know, a late second round pick, looked at as a very raw passer, but a good athlete. You like the person. And that's kind of what Milroe is in terms of the characters off the charts. He won the academic Heisman. And you like the tools. It's just, it's going to take time. It's going to take development. And some teams might be in a position where they could go that route. Other teams, they don't have that type of patience. They need somebody that's going to show a quicker return on investment than what Jalen Milroe probably needs.
Dane Brugler here with us. When we get to Travis Hunter, how do you think, is it just dependent on what team he goes to? I don't know if you think he's going to the Browns or Giants right now, but how do you think he'll get used in the NFL?
Yeah, it's team dependent. The teams are very split on, okay, should we, because you're going to have a primary position and a secondary position. Some teams really want to see him on defense because they believe that's his top, his best ceiling. They believe genuinely he could be a top three corner in the NFL. And then you try to mix in, and it's also theoretically easier if he's a full-time defensive player. And then you have a package of 25-ish plays on offense, try to get him 8 to 10 touches every single game. And even when he's out there, it just, all of a sudden the defense has to account for that. You could be a decoy on some plays. So I think that's the best route, but there are some teams, and I think the Browns are one of them, that look at it and say, he's too explosive to not make him a full-time offensive player. Give me the guy that's going to help impact the scoreboard, and we know the Browns need an injection of life on that offense, and if they don't go quarterback at two, I think they'll look at Travis Hunter, the receiver, and say, look, this is what's going to help us both now immediately and then also long-term, giving us a weapon like this. And so right now where we stand, I think Travis Hunter goes two, and I think the Browns look at him primarily as a receiver.
And then I'm assuming you then take Abdul Carter three with the Giants is the way that it seems like you're going?
That's the way I would turn right now. And pass rusher is not an immediate need for this team, but it's when you're drafting top five, you draft players, not positions. You draft the impact guys, cornerstone guys. You know, they draft, you know, Kayvon Thibodeau is still on this team. They gave Brian Burns a lot of money last offseason. But you draft the Abdul Carter level of player who can be a true difference maker with his pass rush and everything that he brings to the field. So he makes the Giants better immediately.
Are the short arms, I'm a Patriot fan, so full disclosure, I want either Travis Hunter, I want Abdul Carter, nothing against Will Campbell, and I love offensive linemen, but when you have those two players who I think are the best two players in the draft, Abdul Carter 1, Travis Hunter 2, I want one of them. The Pats are at 4. If this plays out, both aren't available, do you then feel like New England is definitely going to take Will Campbell, or do they get scared away from him?
No, I think that Will Campbell makes sense. And, you know, watching Drake May last year with so little help around him and seeing the success, the success that he still had, though, is like just very encouraging for what he will be moving forward. And so I think the idea, okay, we add Stephon Diggs to the mix. What if we add a left tackle like Will Campbell? And just worst case scenario, he struggles a left tackle. You have to move him inside to guard. It's not the worst. It's not the end of the world. It's not the worst thing that, because you're still going to get a really good offensive lineman. Now, ideally, yes, you want him to lock down the left tackle spot for the foreseeable future. And I think there's absolutely an outcome where that happens. It just, the shorter arms lessens that margin for error. But I think when you focus on the feet, the body control, his ability to finish consistently, he's above average across the board. And, you know, he did it the last 30 games that he played, he gave up 2 sacks and he played in the SEC. So he's seen a lot of football and he's experienced enough where I think he can make that transition to left tackle. I think it makes a ton of sense at 4 for the Patriots.
When we get to Ashton Jeanty and Tyler Warren, how early can they go? I was thinking maybe you have Jeanty go to the Raiders at 6. I could see Tyler Warren maybe going as early as 7 to the Jets. If he's still on the board at 10, if I'm Chicago, I know you have Komet, but I'd be taking Warren as well.
Yeah, I think both of those, if either one of those two guys are there at 10 to Chicago, that's the pick. Yeah, I think the idea of upgrading your offense, and when you think of Ben Johnson, he runs a lot of 12 personnel. So, you know, think of what he did with Sam Laporta in Detroit, the ability to add that with a Tyler Warren. Yeah, I think it makes a lot of sense. It's an underrated fit that I think makes a lot of sense. And then with Jeanty, it's interesting because this is just not a great draft after those top 3 or 4 picks. And so with Jeanty, I think teams are going to look at it and say, all right, well, if I had a 1A pass rusher available, I'm taking the pass rusher, but there isn't one. So instead of taking a 1B pass rusher, let's take the 1A offensive threat, and that's Jeanty. And so even the Jaguars at 5, that would not surprise me at all. The Raiders certainly at 6 make a ton of sense. So, and if somehow he gets past those two, I don't think he's falling past the Bears. But yeah, and I agree with you with the Jets with Tyler Warren. You could argue tight end might be their biggest need on the roster. So that just drop a guy like Tyler Warren in the mix certainly makes sense for a team that is going to try to help their young quarterback, Justin Fields, try to help him out even more, not make it just the Garrett Wilson show.
Last thing I'll ask you, defensive players in this draft, we talked about Travis Hunter, we talked about Abdul Carter. The next three best defensive players for you to round out the top five best defensive players, I'm assuming Mason Graham is obviously on that list for you. Who else?
Yeah, and even Mason Graham, I think as much as I do like him, when I think of a top five, seven defensive tackle, I think of, you know, Quinnen Williams and Jalen Carter and those guys, and he isn't quite on that level. So there is a little bit of a drop off, but you still like the player because he just pops off the tape consistently. After that, I really like Jalen Walker out of Georgia, a hybrid pass rusher, can do a little bit of everything, football characters off the charts. Ideally, I'm drafting a guy like that in the mid to late first round. But in this draft class, that's the type of guy where I'm looking at in the top 10. And then after that, I think it gets one of the pass rushers, whether it's Mike Green from Marshall, Shamar Stewart, A&M, guys that maybe have some holes in their game. But, you know, you're betting on the upside. Pass rush upside is something that teams will always chase. And I think this team or this draft has more of that upside and potential than proven production at the position. But it's not going to stop teams from going that direction.
You know, Will Johnson, like this time last year, like after the draft wrapped up, I would see him always going in the top five. I know he missed a lot of games this year. Mm-hmm. Where can you see Will Johnson going now?
Yeah, he's a wild card. Anywhere between, you know, 11 and say like 23, I think is where he's going to be in that range. You know, like you said, he's been injured, so we haven't even seen him this draft process. And that's been a big question with him is just the long speed. You know, are we going to see a 40-yard dash from Will Johnson? And, you know, we know it's a stopwatch position. So the tape is good, but if we don't have a 40-yard dash and some of the teams are kind of questioning, all right, well, how injured was he throughout the year? Did he kind of mail it in and just say, all right, it's time to get ready for the draft? Those types of questions are why he might fall out of the top 15, might fall out of the top 20, but it's still a good player, still a guy that's going to be an NFL starter and contribute pretty quickly.
He's Dane Brugler, does a great job, NFL draft writer for The Athletic, kind enough to join us on the Zach Gelb Show. Dane, appreciate it. Thank you.
Anytime. Thanks, Zach.
All righty, Dane Brugler right there. Excellent draft conversation. Appreciate him jumping on board with us. When we come on back, the odds for the AFC to get to the Super Bowl did come out the other day, and I can't believe them. Because there is the team that should be one, and they're not one, and they're not two. So let's talk a little about that team, and I think we all know who that team is going to be when we come on back. All right, it is Zach Gelb Show on the Infinity Sports Network, coming up 17 minutes from now. Precisely 17 minutes from now. Ryan Hot Take Hickey will join us in studio, and we'll see what his latest hot take is. FanDuel, they put out the latest odds to win the AFC for this upcoming year. Before the draft, you know, with what happened so far in free agency. And quite frankly, the three teams that are in the top three, I don't have a problem with. But the order makes absolutely zero sense. So the Ravens are at plus 350. They're number one. The Buffalo Bills are at plus 360. They're at number two. Then the Kansas City Chiefs are at plus 410. They're number three. How the Chiefs, who have won the AFC five out of the last six seasons, aren't the number one team is stupid. All right? And I'm not even just saying stupid. Really stupid. Like really, 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 really stupid. And then also, someone try to make sense of this for me. And I know the Ravens got DeAndre Hopkins. Ooh, gee golly. But the Ravens just lost to the Bills in the playoffs. How are the Ravens slightly more of a favorite to come out of the AFC where when it matters, the Ravens can't beat both either, not just one, either, both, the Bills and the Chiefs in the playoffs? The Ravens had now lost twice to the Bills in the playoffs, and we saw what the Ravens did up against the Chiefs in the playoffs 2 years ago. Home AFC championship game, Kansas City had nothing on offense, and the Ravens couldn't find a way to put the ball in the end zone a few times. So Kansas City should be one, the Bills should be two, and quite frankly, the Ravens should be three. So give me one word here to describe the Chiefs being ranked third here in the AFC to get out of the AFC to head to the Super Bowl. Stu, what would your word be, just wondering?
So can it be a phrase?
Sure.
Prisoner of the moment.
Prisoner of the moment.
They're going off the Super Bowl and that alone.
Can I ask the question then?
Sure.
What's the moment for the Ravens? What's the moment for the Bills then?
That's a fair point.
But you're not wrong. because Kansas City just got absolutely just waxed by the Eagles in the Super Bowl. They got emasculated, but still, they were the team that's been at the tippy-tippy top of the mountain for five out of the last 6 years out of the AFC. Samter, who is a Fugazi, a one-time or two-time Kansas City Chiefs fan, now he's back on the Jets bandwagon after just ditching the Jets. Now he's all back in on the Jets. What would be your one word or a phrase, if you want to go like Stu, who's a big catchphrase guy now, what would be your word or phrase to describe the Kansas City Chiefs being in at number three?
I'm going to actually stick to the actual phrasing that you said. One word, unlike Stu, who's like changing the whole rules around here. One word.
Well, tension between Stu and Santa today.
Seriously,
let's
Stu.
See you guys fight. All righty. Have you guys be, you know, Patty Pimblett wasn't good on the air with us the other day. Maybe we have, instead of Patty Pimblett and Michael Chandler, Stu up against Samter. A little brawl here.
Oh, he's going down, baby.
That would actually be a fun fight.
I would take Stu. I love Stu. I'll just say this.
I think Mike fights dirty.
I fight dirty, but
he would bite your kneecaps off, Dan Campbell.
Well, first of all, Stu's not that much taller than me, so I don't think I have to go for the kneecaps. But the way I know that I would beat Stu in a fight, one time he went to punch me, like kind of like a joke punch.
Yes.
And I realized that he tucks his thumb into his fist.
Oh, a little broken knuckle then.
Like, how do you can't punch like that, which made me realize Stu doesn't know how to fight. I would take Stu down. It's over.
Any retort, Stu?
In his fairness, I've never been in a fight.
No, you're a lover.
Yeah.
Have you ever been in a fight, Samter?
I've been in a few.
I was going to say, I would have bet yes.
I've been in some kerfuffles.
I have been in two fights in my life.
Fist fights or like brawls?
One was in a fist fight because I was actually trying to break up a fight, and then someone started throwing at me, and then I threw a punch, and the person got knocked out. And the other one was in a intramural hockey game. Which someone kept on taking the stick and swiping their hockey stick at my calf. And we had a player on the team who was very good at hockey, and we were beating this team like a drum. And I was basically like Sean Avery standing in front of the net with the stick, just waving it back and forth in front of the goaltender. And this kid swiped my leg too many times. And the kid that actually played hockey that was on my team, who was a good friend of mine, was like, I've had enough. You do that again to him, I'm going to punch you. So once he threw a punch, I felt like I had to throw a punch as well. And there was a little force behind that punch. I think if you guys teamed up, that would be a more fair fight. Like the two of you up against me. I still think I would win, but I think it would be that could be more fun, if we're being honest, than just seeing Samter and Stu go up against one another.
Stu and I would work out a strategy, and you're going down.
I don't think so.
You're going down.
I don't think so. I think I would find a way to win.
But my one word.
Yeah, did you even give your word?
Yeah.
I'm like sitting there. I go, how do we get to this point where we're all just going to start throwing fisticuffs here?
Listen, if you're going to pit me and Stu together, I got to defend myself and bite some ankles. No, one word for me is fatigue. I think people are just like looking for a reason to not pick the Chiefs anymore. It's been too easy to pick the Chiefs. It's kind of like what happened with the Patriots. Every year, everyone was like, oh, this is Brady's last year. Oh, the Patriots are on a decline. And then like 8 years later, they're still going to Super Bowls. After a while, there's fatigue, and there's almost like this. The Chiefs were 14-1 before, or 15-1 before that last game of the season, Broncos, where they rested everybody. Like, they were, every game was close, but they beat all the best teams. They had one loss in the middle of the season. They went back to the Super Bowl again. There's no reason to think the receivers are going to be healthy. They're getting Rashee Rice back, right? Travis Kelce, probably on his last season, maybe last two. But, like, they have plenty. They're going to be fine.
You want my word? Jackassery. It's seriously just jackassery not to have the Kansas City Chiefs with the best odds. I'm not even saying they're definitely going back to the Super Bowl, but I've seen this story. They, like Samter said, they are what my team was. And how many times have we entered a season, oh, the Patriots are falling off, oh, Belichick hates Brady, oh, this and that. It's so stupid. And also, here's the other thing. None of these teams outside of Cincinnati in the AFC have defeated Kansas City when it matters. Now, Cincinnati can't get out of their own way because we don't know what's going to happen with the Trey Hendrickson situation, even though I think he's going to be back with them next year. But he doesn't want to be there right now. So I think if I was doing the odds, I put the Chiefs 1, I would put the Bills 2, I would put the Ravens 3. Oh, boy. I don't even know if I could put the Bengals 4th or 5th right now. They get off to slow starts. You know, they may need Stu and Samter to play on that defense, for crying out loud. Yeah, you got T. Higgins. You got Jamar Chase. You got Joe Burrow, who's a silent killer. I would actually think, you know what? I'll give you a hot take here. I would put the Texans 4 because of C.J. Stroud, and everyone's killing them because they're offensive line right now. And you got two great pass rushers in Danielle Hunter and then also Will Anderson. And I didn't think I'd put this team there. But what about the Broncos? Like, Sean Payton, Super Bowl winning head coach. Bo Nix, really good season. That team has a solid defense, and they beefed up their defense even more, getting the two players from San Francisco. I don't think the Broncos are a bad pick at plus 1,500, but do I think that they're going to beat Kansas City when it matters? No, I don't. So the Bengals, the belief in the Bengals is because of belief in Joe Burrow and a belief on what they did in the past. But heading into this year, you know, I can't trust Cincinnati to get off to a good start. And their defense, you know, we don't even know what's going to happen with Trey Hendrickson. So I need more clarity on that situation. And I'm a huge Burrow fan before I put all my eggs in the Cincinnati Bengals basket.
If you had to bet, put money into it, would you put your money Chiefs. On... Well, no, I wasn't going there.
Oh, I was going to say, plus 410. I should take that right now.
You were talking about the Broncos, but if I'm looking at the AFC West, I'm taking the Chargers over the Broncos.
That's fair. The only thing is, do they have enough around Herbert? And also, we haven't seen Herbert. I know Bo Nix hasn't won a playoff game yet. It was his first year in the postseason, and they were going up against the Buffalo Bills. But Justin Herbert now has been in two playoff games, and I like Herbert, but they choked it away up against the Jaguars. And then this past year, he was an interception machine. All right, it is the Zach Gelb Show on the Infinity Sports Network. We'll come on back with Ryan Hot Take Hickey. He's going to join us on the other side for his in-studio hit, but standing by with the latest sports flash, here is the Ackman, Rich Ackerman. Alrighty, welcome back in. It is the Zach Gelb Show on the Infinity Sports Network, and it is a Hot Take Hickey Wednesday. And now joining us, I feel like he could be in a straw hat and be wearing jeans and have about 15 beers in his hand, Ryan Hot Take Hickey. Hickster, what's happening?
What an intro. I am fired up to be here. Thank you for having me.
So last week we didn't get to see you because of the fact that we were traveling to San Antonio, and I remember we played the song that a listener sent to us 2 weeks ago, mm-hmm. and I said to Stu and Santer, I go, I kind of like the song. I want to hear the song again. And after further review, I do believe that we are now going to play that each and every week when you do join us.
I love it. Give Bobby Buckwheat a lot of credit.
Oh, is that a Bobby Buckwheat one?
I believe so. The beat is good. The lyrics are incorrect, but creative.
I thought that was a Mike's, what was it? A Psych Mamter tweet.
Was it?
Yeah,
oh,
I apologize. Think Bobby did another one.
My apologies, Mike and, or Psych and Bobby.
Psych, you got the wrong number.
That was a good one.
You remember that? Sweet dollar tea from McDonald's. I drank that. You know my best friend? He made that his yearbook quote. The sweet dollar tea
really?
From McDonald's.
That just
and
goes to
such
show
like
you.
A nice, quiet kid. And that was his yearbook.
They allowed you to do anything back in the day.
Yeah, mine was live from the Palatial Yet Not Overly Ostentatious Studios. That's how much of a nerd I was in high school.
Oh, I did not know that was like a high school. Mm-hmm. I thought that was kind of more as your broadcasting career developed, maybe late college.
So it's actually paying homage to Steve Fredericks, who was a talk show host in Philadelphia that my dad produced back in the day. And he would say live from the Palatial Yet Not Overly Ostentatious Studios of, I think, WCAU. Anyway, I can't see what it says on your graphic today because this computer has changed. Let me go to the YouTube here. Oh, wow. Santa's really going at you today.
Let's hear it.
What do you think it's about?
I have truly, the fact that we've been off for 2 weeks and there's kind of a lot and a little going on in the sports world, I have no idea where he's going.
By the way, did you go away recently?
I went to Scottsdale last week.
Oh, I was going to say, you look tan right now.
It was in the nice sun of Arizona.
Yeah, I get tan easily, but I went to San Antonio, and for some reason, I still look as white as a ghost. I just tuned into the YouTube because I could see you, and you are glistening.
Sitting 2 feet from each other, and
it took you
to go into the chat?
Yeah, I didn't notice it. It says Ryan Hickey. Of course he picked Houston. You picked the Cougars?
That's right. The Cougs, baby.
And no wonder why they lost the game right at the wire. What was your reaction to the national championship?
Shock. I really thought up 12. Houston got it. And it just felt like one of those games where you heard the announcers say, like, oh, Florida is trying to play Houston's game. I thought this game's over. Cougs got it. They caught them, played the game to their style. And to see them collapse almost the exact same way Duke collapsed against them 2 days earlier, I was shocked. I was shocked that I did not think they would get rattled in the last minute the way they did. They just looked discombobulated. The last three possessions, just
four straight turnovers.
Throw them out the window.
Well, what did you make of the final play? Because here's my take, and this was just in the moment. And you know me, I don't like to second guess it. Mm-hmm. I was screaming at my TV, and I had money on Florida. So I wanted Florida to win. I had Florida on the money line. I didn't do it -1.5. But I put money on Florida on the money line. It was like a +115 or something like that. And I'm screaming, go, 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 go. And they waited and waited and waited and waited and waited and waited. And then buzzer sound, they lost.
I like the idea of going for three because they are a very prolific three-point shooting team. And you have multiple options.
Yeah, they stunk of the game, though, offensively.
They did. And to your point of kind of standing around, no one's moving. Let's get a screen. Okay, we're going to go in the corner. Oh, shoot, I got to give the ball up. Like, there was – it did not – I don't know what Kelvin Sampson called up. He's been a genius all year long. Whatever that play call was, throw it in the trash because that did not work.
Yeah, it was no bueno. All righty. So I had a little task here for Hickey. Because Hickey is not elite when it comes to the food department.
I disagree.
You know, if we're doing a mock draft of people that know food around here, you're like Jalen Milroe for crying out loud. I mean, get invited to the draft because we like you, but you should not be.
I mean, I'm glad I'm getting drafted
early.
Overall. I figured you'd go UFA.
Oh, yeah, that's true. All right. I would say Brock Purdy, but he's gone on to have a pretty good career.
I'll take Brock Purdy's career so far and his contract.
You're like the Chad Jackson of the food
world. I don't even know who that is.
He was a second-round pick for the Patriots out of Florida. He was a bust at wide receiver. A lot of high expectations, and then it was wah, wah, wah.
Pulling that one out.
You listen to your show, usually, your show, you think, oh, high expectations. I think you probably know what he's talking about, food, and then you open up your mouth with some of these food takes. It was terrible. Yes, Anther?
I feel like Christian Hackenberg makes a lot of sense.
Oh,
now, isn't he a friend of the show?
He is a friend of the show.
What are you taking shots at him for?
Well, he's a Penn State guy. He went to my Jets. My. His last name is Hack. So I think it kind of all works together.
Well, Hickey was there when the first time I had Hackenberg on the air, and he handled it well because I used to call him Sackenberg when he was at Penn State, and Temple sacked him, I think, like 10 times or something in that game.
It's a rough
game.
One.
Yeah, it was ugly. But he took it well, and then
times.
We became friendly. I love Hackenberg. Anyway, I gave it to you to this little simple task. It was Scotty Scheffler came out with his master's menu. So for appetizers, he had cheeseburger sliders, firecracker shrimp, and then Papa Chef's meatball and ravioli bites. So start me off with your appetizer. If you won the Masters, instead of this beige jacket that you have on with the blue sleeves, if you won a green jacket, what would you be serving for your appetizer?
Appetizers start
peanut butter
again,
and jelly sandwiches.
This is my dinner. I'm the champ. You said it. I'm not kidding. PB&J sandwiches, but because this is Augusta and this is, you know, this is the top of the top, we are cutting off the crust. We're not getting Uncrustables. No, just I love Uncrustables. Mm-hmm. But we're going the real thing and we're having handmade PB&J, peanut butter being Jif, no doubt about it. Cut the crust off, little bite-sized
PB&Js. Wait, you cut the crust off?
For this occasion, yes. You're not having a full sandwich.
Oh, normally you wouldn't cut the crust off.
No, never. Right. But this is
say,
the appetizer.
What are you, a psycho?
Because this is my dinner. Small bite-sized PB&Js, no crust, right there for the taking.
All right, I'm going to give the guy some time on the other side of the glass because I have a clip for you. If they could find it, it's going to blow your mind. You may not even make it to JR show. You may just die on the spot, if we're being honest.
Die from laughter? Die from embarrassment?
Insanity. Yeah.
Okay.
This one's going to be tough. But anyway, so your app only PB&J?
That's right. It's my dinner. I'm the champion. People, you are eating what I want to eat. PB&Js are the appetizer. If you don't like it, sorry, kick rocks.
All right, what's the first course for Scotty Scheffler was Texas-style chili with cheddar cheese, jalapenos, and corn chips. Your first course is?
We will go.
By the way, Two-Tone Tony says Hickey is a freak. Bendozo says, how old is this guy for your PB&J take? So the YouTube chat, roasting ya.
Please. First course will be chips, salsa, guac. It sets up the main course.
So we have peanut butter and jelly sandwiches,
right,
and chips,
salsa,
sauce,
guac,
salsa,
fresh
and guac.
I'm sure that's Augusta fresh guac.
Let me tell you.
That's right.
So far,
so good.
I'm calling in a large pizza order on the way home because this menu sucks right now.
This is just
now
hurtful.
Before we get to the main course and dessert,
mm-hmm,
you know Jim Larrañaga, right?
Oh, yeah. Coach.
You like Jim Larrañaga, right?
Sure, I like Jim.
You have no issues with Jim, right? Wonderful run with what he did at George Mason in Miami.
It was legendary. Legendary run. He's a great coach in Miami, sure.
Nice
what
guy,
do you got to say?
Right? Used to join us a lot 6 to 10 p.m. when we were
on the surface, to catch myself or whatever he's about to say here, mm-hmm, he's a very nice guy.
Mm-hmm.
On the surface.
Nothing bad to say about him, right?
I have no right now, at this very moment, no ill words towards one Jim Larrañaga.
You would probably want to, like, if Jim Larrañaga was in New York City, hit you up and said, hey, you want to go get dinner? That's a guy like, oh, yeah, I would love to get a dinner. It'd be a good grand old time, right?
I, at this moment, would not say no at the moment.
Okay.
At the moment.
This is Jim Larrañaga on Hochman and Crowder on 560 WQAM. Listen up.
I have never had a peanut butter and jelly sandwich.
How's that possible?
I have a jelly sandwich.
Oh, what?
You know, I used to love Reese's peanut butter cups. And I love peanut butter with chocolate, but I've never had a peanut butter and jelly sandwich.
Coach, it's almost impossible to go through life without having a peanut butter and jelly sandwich. Even as a kid, you never had peanut butter and jelly?
No, not one time. I told you, I had a bite of one.
Lord.
I had a bite once, and no, not for me. Never had another one.
Lord, you know, the Reese's peanut butter cups, they just came out with peanut butter and jelly.
No way.
Reese's peanut butter cups. Yeah, it just came out like a couple weeks ago.
That will fail. There's no way you're going to eat peanut butter and jelly and chocolate. Come on.
So,
wow.
Watching Hickey right there and his reactions was kind of like how Hickey would used to watch Carson Wentz play football.
Jelly sandwich?
Never had a peanut butter and jelly.
I've had peanut butter sandwiches millions of times, and that is delicious.
Never just jelly.
That would never even cross my mind.
So I'm going to be honest. I don't like jelly. I've had a peanut butter and jelly sandwich before, but when I was a kid, I did not like jelly. So my mom would just make me the peanut butter sandwich.
That's normal. That's fine.
And the best is when, you know, once a month, she would throw some M&Ms actually in the peanut butter sandwich.
Love that.
Mm. Very good.
A college special.
Yeah, that's why I was a fat kid, probably.
I do have a peanut butter sandwich that you might find disgusting, but it was amazing. Fred Savage in the movie Little Monsters ate peanut butter and onion sandwiches, and they were delicious.
Peanut butter and onion.
Delicious.
Yeah, that's a no for
you've
me.
Are you saying they're delicious because you've tried them?
Yeah, why do you think Santa's breath stinks?
I used to eat them like almost every day.
Ugh.
Oh, I'm going to be sick.
They're delicious.
That's worse than Jim Larrañaga never having PB&J. I'd rather never have a PB&J than eat peanut butter and onion.
Everyone who I've talked to says that, and then they try it, and then they mea culpa.
Okay, main course. So you have peanut butter and jelly sandwiches with the crust cut off. You have chips, guac, and then salsa.
That's right.
What else we got? What's the main course?
The main course, all you can eat, all you can make, taco/burrito bar.
Okay.
Steak, chicken, beef, no shrimp. We're not doing shrimp tacos here. No way.
Mm.
But that's what we're going with. And whatever the fixings you want. We got corn. We got
no boneless
some
wings.
Peppers. No boneless wings.
Did you see Cody Bellinger got food poisoning?
By the way, did you see the picture of the wings he posted?
They had ranch. Had to.
Oh, I don't know what it was. Bones. Just to let you know.
Yeah, that's what it was.
Bone in wings. Mm-hmm. He gets sick.
Your menu kind of sucks.
I would disagree.
This is we got chips and guac and peanut butter and just
the. I think
taco
the taco
station?
Bar. The taco bar is gonna.
Yeah, for an appetizer.
Slap.
It would be good.
Oh my goodness!
No, the taco bar course. Sounds awesome.
Yeah,
taco,
for an appetizer.
Steak on the grill. They're sizzling. Beef, chicken. Oh,
these hand motions you keep on making, Hickey.
I mean, I wish I won the Masters. I'm ready. I'm ready to go to the golf course and win a championship so I can have this come to reality.
Are you a dessert guy?
Oh, big time.
All right, so what's the dessert here? Because he went a warm chocolate chip skillet cookie with vanilla bean ice cream. Elite.
That is, and that'd be number two. But my mom, shout out to her, makes an incredible ice cream cake with like an Oreo crust, espresso chip ice cream with like a hard chocolate shell on top.
Mama Hickey makes this?
I'd have to get her in the kitchen, and she'd be working overtime to make what are there, 50 people there? I make probably like 10 of them.
Okay. Can I pay your mother to make us this dessert for the station?
Wow. You want to pay her for her services?
Yeah.
I mean, maybe.
$20. How much you charge?
Well, I got to see.
40. I'll give you 20. I'll give her 20.
Could be $100.
Yeah, but $100. I got to share with all these animals here.
Well, that's true. A lot of vultures here.
You know, I'm not trying to just feed the staff once again. You know, I already got them pizza a few weeks ago.
So that's the dessert saved the meal is what you're saying.
Yeah, the dessert's very good. Okay. The dessert's the best part of your meal.
What is yours?
I got about 45 seconds here. To squeeze this in. I have not gone through.
Real
quickly, this is what I would do. I would do appetizers. I would do pigs in a blanket. Great unifier in this country. Brings everybody together. I would also have chicken wings. I would have Philly cheesesteak egg rolls. That's what I would do to start. The first course would be a lobster roll. I would have some lobster.
Wow.
And then the main course, I would do a little rigatoni alla vodka and some filet mignon. I'd tell Papa Gelb to get in the kitchen, and I would do some lasagna as well. And then the dessert, I would make the famous icebox cake, the cookie cake, which is the Nabisco chocolate wafers, and then the homemade heavy whipped cream is what I would do.
So you're getting in the kitchen to make your own dessert your own champion's dinner. Respect.
Yeah, that's what I would do.
Scotty's not getting in the kitchen, that's for sure.
No.
I don't think Phil, Tiger, they're not in the kitchen.
Tiger is, has his hands full these days.
Well, Tiger's very private these days.
I don't think he's private anymore.
Well, he asked me. He's very public. We'll ask at the same time to be private, so I don't know. I don't know which lane Tiger's choosing.
Real quickly, one word. If the Giants, Browns, and Raiders all pass on Shador Sanders, what's the one word that comes to mind?
For those three organizations, I would say smart.
Ooh, I would say stupid. All three?
All three. For their in that position with where they are, I would agree.
Just Coach Prime, friend of the show. If you're listening, the views of Ryan Hot Take Hickey do not reflect the views of Zach Gelb on the Infinity Sports Network. I'm a believer. Ryan Hot Take Hickey just is not a fan of the Colorado program. All right? Let's get my dear friend Warren Sapp over here to just...
Oh, boy.
Just punch the crap out of Ryan Hot Take Hickey. All righty. Enjoy your peanut butter with the, with the crust.
I wish I had it right now.
And your chips and your guac.
Changed Jim Larranaga's life.
Yeah. All right, Ian Eagle going to join us on the other side. Is he rooting for himself or Noah Eagle to win the sports Emmy? We'll find out next.